This is Poolside Genius, where we always make a splash.
All right, this is the Poolside Genius, and we're back. The pool's all uncovered, ready to go. It's July, and we have a great set of storylines for us today. We're going to start off with the NBA free agency. Reams, what are your quick thoughts on NBA free agency?
First off, welcome back. Thanks, Bender. It is good to be back. It's been a while. It's kind of a bummer sitting here in July when the sports scene ultimately is kind of stagnant. But yeah, the NBA free agency extravaganza, I guess you could say, certainly was pretty hot in terms of the amount and in such a small proximity of time, how many deals were made. There's a lot to unpack with the NBA. I think the interesting thing we could certainly discuss is how NBA free agency, in terms of how it's set up in regards to it, in relation to its own draft. The draft comes first, then free agency, whereas the NFL free agency is first, then the NFL draft comes. How that impacts teams' decisions. I think also simply if you want to take a look at the NBA free agency versus Major League Baseball's free agency, which took, 6 months?
Well, you start to look at it, and some of your top players aren't signing until, middle of the, a quarter of the season is through?
And
that's even a bigger problem in baseball because they have to do, spring training. They have to get their arms ready to go, especially if they're pitchers, or they have to see live batting practice, and that's definitely an issue. From the baseball perspective, but it's a snooze fest. It used to be the winter meetings would crank everybody up. You'd hear all the rumors. You get really excited. But now it just doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of movement. And I think that has more to do with the economics of baseball than it does necessarily with a draft or anything. Because, again, the baseball draft has very little to do with or nothing to do with the MLB free agency just because those players are so far away and it really has
in terms of the MLB draft, absolutely. I think the situation with Keuchel, he didn't make a decision or teams weren't making a decision because if they did before a certain time, they would lose draft compensation or
the qualifying offer. And right. I think that's one of the major issues that we're going to see with the labor negotiations. When you start looking at that whole setup, it seems to have negatively impacted the game overall, not only from the players' perspective because they're missing out on their bigger deals, but I think it's also hurt the free agency buzz. I think it's hurt with some of the trading.
And again,
you also have to look at, is that more or less a result of teams hoarding their resources so much like they are these days in terms of prospects, controllable players, etc., that they're not willing to forfeit that compensatory pick by signing a player that's been given the qualifying offer. So that's all that has to play into there, and it's ultimately hurting the game.
And that's exactly the point I was going to make in terms of you think of Major League Baseball's buzz, whether it is in the off season or even right now, not until you start getting into October or if there's a real tight race, it's just not there overall compared to what I'm going to argue the NBA now.
The other thing with baseball that you can say is that there's so many teams tanking, that are, kind of stripping the team down, that there are a lot of teams that are out of it. The only team that doesn't know that they're out of it, that even though they're out of it, are the New York Mets, and that's neither here nor there. But, there's still that glimmer of hope with the home run derby and Pete Alonso hopefully pulling that out.
Oh, please. Hey, listen, it's not July 1st. I'm not going to start talking about Bobby Bonilla Day. But, transitioning to the NBA, though, a lot of people can make the argument that the NBA game has changed, has suffered in terms of how it's played or watched. But I'm going to make the argument that it's at such a heightened aspect right now with interest, simply for in terms of this offseason, in terms of free agencies, whether it's been Kyrie or KD, or now obviously the big watch is where's Kawhi Leonard going to end up going. I think there's a lot to try and see how that impacts the game itself.
Well, one thing that I'm going to say is that in basketball, I think those big-time free agents certainly impact can completely reverse the fortunes of a franchise, much more so than if you start looking at baseball. Some of these big-time free agents, in a few years, are looking to do the Bobby Bonilla deferred contract to get rid of them, or you know, trade them in a salary dump shortly thereafter, and it seems like it just doesn't pay off. And furthermore, if you even go into the NFL, how many high-priced free agents ever produce at an even close to equal level to what they were doing beforehand? Very few. I mean, you might look at Drew Brees, maybe.
Peyton Manning going to the Broncos, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, so there's it seems to be quarterbacks.
Right.
But then again, you also have some of those quarterbacks who were traded, like a McNabb or something like that, who really flamed out at that point with Washington and later on Minnesota. But yeah, you see that the free agency in basketball, it has a huge impact on the team because it is such a small team. You know, you don't have to balance it out amongst the 53-man roster. You don't have to balance it out you know, with the rest of your budget in Major League Baseball. So it is a little bit different. And again, you get a LeBron, well, not for the Lakers, but you get a LeBron, that's going to change your fortunes. You get a Kawhi, that's going to change your fortunes. So you can see that it has a much bigger impact. So it should be a little bit more frenzied and exciting.
Speaking of how a franchise can change, in this case, the NBA quite quickly, I think case number one is going to be the Brooklyn Nets.
But is KD going to be back this year? I mean,
no, he's not. But the miraculous thing, and I guess it's the power of the players. It certainly, unlike any of the other sports, the NBA has, since LeBron has shown this way, the power is certainly in the players' hands much more so than the owners or the general managers. I mean, in terms of, and this is where the Knicks didn't really understand it, you know, recognizing that KD's relationship with Kyrie was so very important, they decided to obviously go to Brooklyn instead. Granted, Brooklyn's ascent has miraculously within the last year changed. You know, Sean Marks has done a really nice job turning that franchise around with absolutely no assets being stripped about 7 years ago from the Celtics. But, you know, what I'm going to mention is, yeah, everyone's saying, gee, the Nets are going to be the next powerhouse. It would not surprise me that they'll do pretty well. Granted, they were a playoff team this year. But I'm going to mention that once KD comes back off a terrible Achilles injury, I'm going to say they're not going to be as powerful as people are suspecting.
But does it matter? I mean, I think this season alone, in ticket sales, in jersey sales. I mean, if KD doesn't play this season, I think he's already paid for himself just in merchandise and whatnot. So I think from a business standpoint, it's definitely worthwhile. You know, again, with the way athletes rehab and you know, sports performance and everything, he'll be back, I'm sure. But you know, even if he doesn't contribute anything this year, it's already a win from the business perspective.
I'm just gonna say, don't hold off on giving the Larry O'Brien trophy to the Brooklyn Nets. And, you know, granted, everybody was, you know, in a feeding frenzy as soon as that occurred last Sunday. But I think another team that to keep an eye out for, obviously, you know, you're going to recognize this could all be mute in a few hours if Kawhi ever decides where he's going. But I think if you look out in the West, it's quite a collection of riches of different teams, whether it's Utah getting Mike Conley, getting Bogdan Bogdanovic, that's a mouthful. They've done a real nice job. I think Utah's going to make a nice run this year. I think Denver obviously has some high talent. I think the West is going to be pretty interesting. Plus, obviously, the Lakers are still going to be quite good. I think LeBron's going to be on a mission to really show that last year was a fluke, him missing the playoffs altogether.
Yeah, but I mean, is he kind of checked out at this point? Is he kind of letting himself round into shape as he looks at other off the court pursuits? And
no doubt about it, going to LA. You know, the interesting thing,
Space Jam coming up.
True, and you know, let's face it. You know, he puts Anthony Davis in that, I guess, to recoup his $4 million that he decided to say goodbye to. But the message I think that Kawhi got from the Lakers, specifically from LeBron, is that he had to recognize that LeBron's saying, hey, listen, I got a few years here in L.A. It's going to be your team. And think about it, in the twilight of your career, Kawhi, you get to play with Anthony Davis. And, you know, that's the selling point. Now, I'm not sure if Kawhi really wants to do that. It's not something that seems like he's ever looked to do, to be the guy, one of the guys, whereas he's always been that team slayer, that championship team slayer when he did it against the Heat. Against LeBron, and he just pretty much did it to the Warriors this past year. I'm not sure he's going to the Lakers.
Interesting. Now, everybody knows where your rooting interests lie. How do you think the Sixers have handled the offseason so far? Do you think they're going to be one of those elite teams after the moves that they made, or you think they're going to be kind of stuck treading water?
No, when you're saying treading water, granted that treading water is, you know, a couple bounces from playing for the Eastern Conference Final.
And that's a couple bounces of, you know, a tough knee injury to Embiid. You know, they could be cellar.
Listen.
He is injury prone, and we've seen it time and time again.
Okay, well, let's talk about free agency.
You have to have a contingency plan.
And here's
for that.
The thing, and this is what I'm going to mention. You know, getting Al Horford is that situation where they're going to load manage Embiid this year. He's not going to play all these games. He's going to be able to stay healthy. He's already lost 20 pounds. I saw a picture of him. He certainly is looking a little bit thinner. I think he's gotten the message. I mean, listen, his reaction to that Game 7 loss tells you everything that's in his mind and in his heart, and the fact that, you know, his reaction shows that he definitely wants to achieve, you know, the highest goal. A lot of these guys might be living the lifestyle. I think with JoJo, I think that's definitely something he certainly wants to attain.
So with Simmons, you know, looking to get a max deal, do you believe that that's the right move?
Yes, absolutely.
Is he a max player?
I mean, yes. And this is what I'm going to say. If you're not going to max him as a young kid, 22, somebody will max him. He's your asset. Even if you max him, let's take the opposite of what I truly feel. Let's say you max him and you think, oh, it's he's going to be an anchor for you. Well, at least he's signed for 5 years. That's tradable. Ultimately, the team that wants Ben is going to get somebody that they know they got 5 years with him, or whatever, how many years that rolls down the line. But that's not going to happen, because if you really understand the game, the things that he can control and the effect he has is multifaceted. And for a guy his position, his height, you know, listen, people are going to say he can't shoot. I'm going to argue.
That's correct.
How do you know? He's an unwilling shooter.
Isn't that scarier?
Well, I think if it's a case that once he feels comfortable and he starts to take a couple jump shots, I think it's going to open up his game. He's just got to get past that, whether it's a mental thing. But for people to say he can't shoot, how do you know? There's not enough evidence, because he hasn't shown it yet. And there's arguments saying, gee, he didn't want to look bad. And for a kid who was dominated throughout his whole entire life of just attacking the rim, court vision, rebounding, ultimately finding triple doubles at every single level he's ever played, in his mind he says, well, why do I have to do something that's not going to look so great? And I think that plays into part of it. Does he come back with a jump shot? I think he's going to have to come back with the thought process that he has to take a jump shot.
How is it different than the issues with Markelle Fultz's shooting?
Well, the difference with Markelle is he always took those shots. You had evidence back in college of him taking those outside shots when he was in Washington. All of a sudden, it just disappeared. When Ben was in LSU, and obviously even younger, his game, LSU played him in the post. He was not the point guard. He was just pretty much directing a lot of things from the high post, kind of did very well, but you never had evidence of him taking jump shots because he was never even on the perimeter back at LSU. Here, at this step, I think he's just got to take that next step. I think he's going to be forced to with either the ball in his hands, or, you know, where do the Sixers get that late game shot creator? The guy who's going to take the last shot. Well, if the ball's going to be in Ben's hands, it's either going to be him or Harris, or you dump it into Embiid. That's your options all of a sudden dwindle by saying goodbye to both JJ and Mr. Butler. So I think overall their defense is going to be smothering, might be definitely top five, maybe even better. Josh Richardson's an ascending player on a fantastic contract, allows them to go get Al Horford and still hopefully replenish their bench with a couple of the higher-end role players that they have brought in free agency. So, listen, it comes back to the fact that where does Kawhi go in terms of, where do the Sixers rank in the East? I think they're going to be in the top three. I think you still got to look at Milwaukee, but I think Milwaukee will take a step back. One of the reasons, I think Kawhi is going to end up back in Toronto is one of the things people don't realize is he's 2 years out from being a 10-year vet. And once you hit that 10-year vet, you now are eligible for the Supermax. So let's say he signs 2 years with Toronto, which he certainly can do, a one-and-one. All of a sudden, 2 years from now, he walks out of that and he can be eligible for the Supermax. So that's going to set him up to then hit this whole free agency bonanza again 2 years from now. He goes to either the L.A. teams, he's signing a four-year deal, and that Supermax now he's looking 4 years down the road. That might be a contributing factor of where we see the claw.
And as we wrap up our talk about the NBA free agency and NBA talk for right now, I just want to kind of look back to last year when... When a question was posed, if you could pick one player to build your NBA team from...
Who did I say? I said Ben Simmons.
You said Ben Simmons. Is that unchanged?
No, it's not, because the things he can do, how he can control the ball, and I'm telling you, if he can just manage to start taking a jump shot... Listen, people compare him. And I'm not saying he is, but they compare him to two players. Magic Johnson and LeBron James. I mean, they don't compare Kawhi Leonard to Magic Johnson.
Those other two have gotten it done.
Absolutely.
Kawhi Leonard's gotten it done.
Let's put it, other than Magic, who got it done when he was a rookie, he was fantastic. The NBA was much different then. It took LeBron a few years to get over the hump when he was with Cleveland.
Yeah,
and ultimately he didn't.
But with Cleveland, did he have someone like Embiid, who's arguably the better player?
No, he certainly did not back then, back with Cleveland. Absolutely not.
So you can see where Ben Simmons was set up in a better situation.
But how
than
old?
LeBron was
but how old was LeBron when
he was
he
right out of high
won.
School?
And he didn't get it done either with the Cavaliers. He had to go to Miami and put a team together with Dwayne and Bosh.
But he didn't have an Embiid there already.
Well, give them time. Listen, you got five. You had this 5 year
window.
You
don't have 5 year window with Embiid's knees.
Really? Okay.
I don't know that you do.
That's true, and that's why they're all in. But their window absolutely is going to be in the very soon to be this year, and within maybe I'll give you another 2 years outside of that. But and then you got to start making decisions. But that's why Elton Brand has done a very aggressive approach. Nothing wrong with it. Trust the process.
All right, and we're back, and it just so happens that Kawhi Leonard has made his decision. Reams, what is your take on Kawhi Leonard?
Well, we could dive into, how Kawhi's decision to go to the L.A. Clippers really changes the whole landscape of the NBA. But a couple things that jump out to me right away is, you think about the timeline. Kawhi, after he was in Los Angeles and he goes back to Toronto, he waited like 3 or 4 days, and everyone was saying, gee, why is he waiting? And if you think about it, everyone was saying, oh, he's going to the Lakers, it's already a done deal. And then all of a sudden, back to the Raptors because he was in Toronto. But everyone was forgetting that the Clippers were the quiet dark horse. And if you think about it, how he gave them extra time, it makes sense because they had to go, they needed that time to go and make a big trade. And that's what they did to get Paul George. But the other thing that really jumps out at me, as soon as Kawhi makes that decision, I immediately think of LeBron. And it's so fascinating if you look at the NBA and how LeBron has just changed the NBA. I mean, I have three different viewpoints on LeBron. Number one, you could arguably say he's the greatest basketball player that's ever played.
Stop.
Arguably. I'm not necessarily saying that. I think in
if But you wouldn't take him over Ben Simmons if you were starting a team.
Right now I would. However, what I'm saying, though, is if you look just at pure talent and the floor game of LeBron, it just remarkable and pretty much arguably the best talent-wise. Jordan, in my mind, though, is the greatest competitor, the greatest he's accomplished the greatest. And we're not talking about Bill Russell and Wilt. That was a whole different era, and they're just gigantic winners. But beyond just LeBron's on-court, I think the second thing that's just so fascinating that he's changed, and he's following in Magic's footsteps, that the off-the-field or off-the-court business acumen that he's going to take off with. And I wouldn't be surprised he throws a little bit of politics and gets that out there, unlike Jordan. I think that's a big aspect of what LeBron's bringing to NBA players. But the biggest
He's also bringing GM LeBron, which obviously here, this is a big loss for GM LeBron.
Exactly. But that's the biggest, I think that's going to be the biggest thing the NBA will take from LeBron, is that he's given or he has shown the NBA players how to take control of their destinations. The NBA is not driven by the owners, unlike the NFL, which is owner driven. NBA is just all in the hands of the players.
Well, and it's the same sort of thing. I would say the NFL and to a lesser degree the MLB as well, because I think you have the minor league players in baseball that are making very low wages. I think you also have the players with the qualifying offer. That certainly makes things a little bit different. NBA has the best situation for its players. They, as you said, they are in the driver's seat. And they get to pick their destinations. They get to force their way out. I mean, really, when you compare it to the NFL, maybe a star quarterback maybe can do that sort of thing. But for the most part, nobody's really getting that type of situation for themselves.
And granted, the overall amount of players that the NFL needs, I think, plays a part in that. But the NBA, it's just fascinating how it's almost like AAU, where you can just say, hey, let's get together, make up a best team. We'll play against someone else's best team. Right now, the NBA landscape, wide open for next year. And I think it's going to be a very fascinating year. I think the Clippers' defense is just going to be incredible with those wing players, Patrick Beverley, obviously Kawhi and Paul George. But, I mean, they're 10 deep. It's going to be a tough Western division out there, whether it's Denver or Utah or the Lakers or the Clippers. Heck, the Spurs are going to make a rebound.
What about the Warriors?
I think they're going to miss Clay. I think it's going to be real tough, even though they got D'Angelo Russell. I think they're really turning the page, and I wouldn't be surprised. What I believe is I don't think they make the playoffs.
Wow.
I just think it's too much to overcome without having Clay, losing
Kevin Durant,
KD. I mean, you can start running double teams at Steph, and defensively, I think they're going to miss Clay's defensive abilities. Draymond's a good switch, but he's not necessarily going to guard the perimeter. D'Angelo Russell's not known for his defense. So I think overall, I'm not betting on the Warriors.
So what do you think happens in the East now?
I think it comes down to three teams. I think it's going to be the Bucks, the Sixers. And it would not surprise me if the Celtics still pull off a trade. I wouldn't be surprised they make a trade. Maybe, Oklahoma City Thunder is looking to sell off their players. Their big center, escapes me right at the moment. But that's what the Celtics need. They need a big time front court player to guard Embiid. I wouldn't be surprised they make some sort of trade. And if that's the case, then it's going to be a three-team race. The Nets aren't going to be – Nets will make a nice run, but without KD next year, I still think they're going to be a little bit not enough talent. And Kyrie, who the heck knows. But that's my gist on it.
All right, as we sit here trying to dodge the rain, you know, we've been thinking about some things that we are looking forward to, some storylines in the NFL that have caught our attention. And, you know, the first one I'm going to go with, and, you know, I think a lot of people are really fascinated by this, especially those of us that follow college football, but how the air raid in Arizona is going to work out with Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury. So, Reams, you know, what do you think the possibility is of Kyler and Cliff dominating out in the desert?
Well, I think, you know, dominating is something that's they're certainly not going to do right away. I think, number one, the nice thing about Kyler is, you know, his mobility, his ability to throw on the run. I think that's something that's going to be quite interesting. Can he do it at the next level?
Well, he's going to have to throw on the run with their offensive line.
Exactly. That's the point I was getting to.
You know, we have to also see, is Cliff going to really kind of adjust his protection schemes and things to fit the NFL and his lack of top-tier talent in the offensive line department?
Last year, their quarterbacks just got crushed. Their offensive line was horrendous. And I'm not so sure they really addressed it well enough this offseason. That being said, you know, the whole shift or the chance to stake their claim with Kyler, I think, is obviously going to bring some excitement to the desert. It's just a matter of being able to, you know, get the ball rolling out there.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a boom or bust sort of thing. I mean, you look at it, you know, Cliff's talking about using tempo. Cliff's talking about, you know, throwing the ball all over the yard.
Chip, what is this, Chip too?
Chip wasn't a throw it all over the yard kind of guy,
true.
Though.
You're
Chip
right.
Chip spreads to run. And
but tempo, I don't know.
But
if
tempo,
that's
certainly. I mean, and there are already people saying he is Chip 2.0, and this is going to, you know, he might have a few good games or a few good weeks, like, you know, Chip or Spurrier, but they think it's going to eventually come crashing down. Now, one of the things that I would say about some of those guys, you know, beyond the fact that they didn't necessarily evolve as much as they could have, a lot of times their talent level wasn't, you know, exactly suited for what they needed. I think that, first of all, Cliff having Kyler, a tailor-made quarterback for his system, is, you know, huge in terms of, you know, whether it's going to be successful or not. And I think it's going to be fascinating because, you know, everybody is mystified by the air raid. It, you know, it's great. People love to see the scoreboard and see the video game like numbers, but, you know, will that actually happen in the NFL, even though there are already teams using quite a few air raid principles and plays?
If you're going to look at Arizona strictly from the 2019-20 season, I think it's going to be quite difficult, though, to get that ball rolling. I mean, you're talking about a division that has an ascending 49ers team, a team coming off a Super Bowl loss, which in most instances history has shown is difficult. I think the Rams are going to not necessarily take a step back, but it's going to have some inherent challenges. And obviously the Seahawks going totally young. They still got Russell Wilson. It's not an easy division.
You know, but one of the other things that I'm fascinated by is the storyline with the Rams and Sean McVay. You know, it seems like anybody that looks like, talks like, has, you know, sat down and had a cup of coffee with or gotten their picture taken with Sean McVay has gotten a head coaching job in the NFL. And, you know, you look at that, all of the people that have left their coaching staff, you look at the Super Bowl hangover, you know, will the Rams, you know, be able to rebound this season, you know, after the Super Bowl loss to the New England Patriots?
It's an obvious question. I mean, not only the Super Bowl hangover, the loss. I mean, you take a look at the Eagles. They lost Frank Reich the year after their Super Bowl win, and they had to really struggle just to make the playoffs. I think another big question mark with the Rams is, what's up with Gurley, with Todd Gurley? Is this injury that kind of plagued him at the back half of last year, is that something that's going to be chronic? Or is it something that he's going to be able to rebound? I mean, talk about a guy that's always had knee issues, and they just relied on him. I know they drafted another running back relatively high.
Yeah, I think that, you know, they're hoping and praying he returns to form. But knee injuries and the fact that they've been kind of consistent throughout his career, that's definitely a cause for concern. And, you know, you have to wonder, you know, did they start to figure out, you know, the cute wrinkles that McVay employs? You know, is it too basic You know, now that the rest of the NFL has really put the target in the bullseye on him.
Well, face it, the key to Goff was his ability to play action. That ability to play action opened up the middle, and those deep middle passes that they just feasted on all season. All of a sudden, no Todd Gurley in the backfield. Now you saw what happened in the Super Bowl with a mastermind on the defense.
And the other thing is all of these other coaching staffs, not that they need to have any more pressure or any more reason to want to succeed and defeat another team, but you know, a lot of these coaches I think are upset that, you know, Sean McVay gets all this credit for being, you know, such a young guy and so innovative. I think, you know, some of these defensive coordinators are kind of upset that the young offensive coaches seem to be getting all the head coaching opportunities. So I think that there's going to be even a bigger push to try and defeat the Rams going forward. So yeah, I definitely think this could be a season where you see the Rams take a major step back. You know, similarly, what are we thinking the Carolina Panthers are going to do with Cam Newton coming back from shoulder injury and surgery, and the fact that, you know, they're trying to tweak how he plays, they're going to try and tweak his throwing motion. Is that a recipe for success in Carolina?
Listen, it's what's the kid from West Virginia, Greer, his first name?
Will
Greer. It's the Will Greer show all of a sudden. Come on now. Listen, scam Newton, he's a scam. To me, he's taken so many hits. You know, his ability to lead has always been a question mark. Is he a talent? Absolutely. But, you know, I think it's going to, the wear and tear is going to catch up with
him.
Now,
when we talk about the ability to lead, though, I find that that's a little bit overrated, because I think, you know, we've heard people question Ben Roethlisberger's leadership abilities. We've heard people question Aaron Rodgers of late. I don't know that is, you know, we talk about it so much in sports and how important that really is, but I don't know that seems to be, you know, a factor in some of these big-time quarterbacks.
But, hold on a second. You brought up two names there that are quite interesting, and obviously you surround it with the leadership word. You know, you look at those two quarterbacks, albeit they are on both iconic franchises that have won in the past and has also won in their early stages of their own careers. You take those two or three Super Bowl victories out of the equation. Are they these incredible quarterbacks? Yes, on talent alone, they certainly are. But I think the leadership part of it is important. And I don't think it's a coincidence that somewhere along the line, these last 4 or 5 years, those two franchises have not taken advantage of their prime years.
So what are you saying? You're saying that they don't have the leadership ability? That's why they haven't taken advantage of their prime years? Or what are you saying? Are you saying that...
I think it's a contributing factor, or at least a coincidence. I would look at it specifically from Roethlisberger's standpoint. I think his inability to be a true leader has allowed the Steelers to really struggle with all of the in-house friction that has occurred, and I think it's finally played out last year. I think, you know, obviously when you have a very top talent in Le'Veon Bell sitting out for the entire year, it's tough to overcome.
But is that Ben Roethlisberger's job, though? Isn't Mike Tomlin there because he's a leader?
I think it's
he doesn't coordinate.
It's a contributing factor, though.
I think that Mike Tomlin, he's the one that needs to be the leader in the room. He's the one that needs to quell this tension. I think certainly Big Ben has contributed to some of this tension, certainly, by calling people out for being disgruntled about their pay and whatnot. And certainly you don't want to do that. But I think when you start pointing the finger at Ben, some of this has to go to Mike Tomlin. Some of this has to go to Mike McCarthy in the Aaron Rodgers as well.
Let's hold off on Rodgers for a second. Still with Ben, there's always been whispers of that he's been this prima donna all the way back to Miami of Ohio. Always this big guy who always wants all the accolades, but when it's time to really get grit, you know, to get your hands dirty and to really be, you know, a true stand-up guy, you know, he's always there to take the accolades, but is he also the type of guy that's going to take the blame? He never takes the blame.
But there are a lot of guys that take the blame that don't have two Super Bowl rings.
Okay.
To play to win the game.
Okay, well, all right. Let's go back to that. What was it? His rookie year. That was a team that he played well, hand the ball off to Bettis, and they had a terrific defense. The second one, all right, they played well. Fantastic team all around. It was the Steeler way. I'm going to argue, though, they had plenty of opportunities to do well, and I really think looking at the whole structure of what has happened within the last 2 years in Steeler Nation, you can't not look at the coincidence that Roethlisberger is always involved. That's pretty much what I'm saying. You want to bring up Rodgers? I think Rodgers is an enigma in terms of what how he's kind of held himself. The talent is fascinating, is top notch. I just think it goes back to the fact that, you know, is he the gunslinger versus, you know, the coach wanting to try and...
Well, here's the thing that I think you're trying to get at. I think you're looking at the fact that, you know, be careful what you wish for. You know, he wants somebody that's more intellectually, you know, on his level in his mind, you know, in terms of an offensive mind as a head coach. And, well, once you get that, you have to realize that those coaches, they're there because they're offensive mind. They don't necessarily want to give that up or cede that to the quarterback. And we're seeing that with Rodgers and the Matt LaFleur audible saga, and whether he's going to allow him to audible or not, and whether that will be destructive to the integrity of the scheme. And you know what, I think sometimes that falls, you know, can it be disruptive at times? Yes. Is it always disruptive? No, obviously. I mean, look at, you know, Brett Favre made a career out of audibling out of Mike Holmgren's plays, you know, Brad Childress's plays. I mean, and, you know, certainly I think that, you know, there's a time and a place for all of it, but it's going to be an interesting thing to watch when you bring in a coach solely because of his perceived offensive acumen, and whether the quarterback buys into that or not is going to be something to watch. But
the thing I would also add in Green Bay's defense, or maybe not in their defense, but is there lack of defense? I don't think they've really surrounded their defense with as much playmakers that could take advantage of having a top three quarterback.
Well, they just brought in a whole bunch of defenders this year. You know, the last 2 years, I would say, with their draft picks, with their free agent signings, they've spent a significant amount of money. I think they're trying to do that. But to get back to Cam Newton, you know, the player that you certainly have some very negative viewpoints on, you know, Cam Newton, if you start to get rid of him or minimize his running ability, I think that's a bad move because he ceases to be that superstar quarterback that he's been throughout his career. The big part of that is the QB-driven run game. The big part of that is him on the run, making those throws down the field. I think if you ask him to sit in the pocket and, you know, find wide open receivers and hit them accurately, I think that's not what his game is based around. It's very similar to Aaron Rodgers. You know, we can bring that back there. Aaron Rodgers does not operate as well if he's sitting in the pocket. He's much more
he's
orchestrating. Or you can even look at Big Ben. He's better outside of the framework of the scheme. Whereas, you know, it's the same thing with Cam. It's just Cam is more of a power-running quarterback.
But Rodgers isn't.
No, Rodgers is scrambling
more
to throw. And I think Cam has been so successful, and it's such a hallmark of his game. You can't take that away from him.
But the point, I think, is the wear and tear is starting to catch up with him. You know, that's the only statement I'm making.
Yeah, I think it's certainly catching up to him like it does to everybody. You know, and I think that's why they were pretty smart to draft Will Greer. You know, I think he's an interesting quarterback out of West Virginia, you know, and we'll see what happens there. They certainly have some intriguing playmakers on their offense. You have DJ Moore at receiver. You have the great Christian McCaffrey, who is just, you know, an all-around phenomenal player, you know, which brings me to my other thought. You know, is he really what we thought Reggie Bush was going to be coming out of USC? Has he become the better version, the idealized version of what we thought Reggie Bush could be in the NFL?
I would think so. It's a great comparison coming out. Reggie never really, I would say the interesting thing with McCafferty, and he even did it when he was in Stanford, is he had the ability, and I would also say still does, to run between the tackles. I'm not sure Reggie was always that adept at doing, at least compared to McCafferty. McCafferty, I just picture him going over, you know, just jumping over people in the wash of the middle of the line, whether it was Stanford or still now.
I think Reggie had some of those years where you thought he was finally going to put it together or be put in a position to put it together, whether that was that year with the Dolphins,
but
he had over 1,000 yards as a runner.
Change of pace runner.
No, he was the
number
lead
one?
Dog.
Okay.
I think there was a year with the Lions where it looked like he was going to do that, but I think by that point the injuries had started to take their toll. I mean, certainly he did some electric things in the return game in the slot, and you saw that early on with the Saints. You know, he was phenomenal early on to that resurrection of the Saints, so to speak, you know, early Drew Brees days. But I think right now, Christian McCaffrey is that total package. I think, like you said, he runs between the tackles. He runs outside the tackles. He catches the ball. He's an all-around player, and I think he's, you know, one of those guys that you can't take off the field.
Speaking of running backs, I mentioned Le'Veon Bell. One of the storylines that I'm going to be quite interested in following, and it's part of it is my guy Joe Douglas is now in charge of the New York Jets. Obviously, is this the year that an AFC East team can actually start to challenge Bill Belichick? I'm not going to say this is the year. However, I think it's going to be quite interesting to watch the Jets this year. I'm not so sure Joe Douglas can make an immediate impact. Granted, now that the draft is over and now we're getting into, you know, or we're approaching training camp, but you know, the whole second year of
Sam Darnold,
the defense that has an incredible amount of talent on the defensive line.
And don't forget Greg Williams, you know, as much as, you know, you want to say about him, he seems to have quite a jump effect in terms of defensive statistics. Now, again, he's very abrasive and, you know, he's kind of a character in and of himself. But, yeah, you look at the Jets and you kind of wonder, though, I mean, is the turmoil over? Has the dust settled because Joe Douglas is there? I mean, we hear about Adam Gase pretty much saying, or, you know, through the reports that he didn't really, you know, he didn't really want to pay for Le'Veon Bell. He didn't want Le'Veon Bell. You know, we talk about this, and, you know, I don't know that it was smart of him or any of his, you know, handlers to leak that, because now you have a player that, you know, you're not getting rid of because he makes so much money. You know, he might be disgruntled now, and I think that's a problem. I think, you know, we're looking at Sam Darnold.
Is he disgruntled? He got paid.
That, you know, he
got paid.
He's a guy that, yeah, but he didn't get paid as much as he wanted to get paid, you know, when he started to sit out. So I think, you know, that could be lingering with him. He's a guy that took a year off. I think, you know, he's shown that he can become disgruntled. You know, so that might be a problem. The other thing is, while Gase is viewed as, you know, this offensive guru because, you know, he's buddy-buddy with Peyton Manning, and he's done some nice things throughout his career. He's worked with Mike Martz. He's worked with McDaniels. You know, he's been around the block quite a bit. Saban ties. But, you know, having a young quarterback having to switch systems his first two seasons, that's usually not an indicator of success. I think, you know, they need to make sure that they give Gase what he needs to kind of be in place if you want to maximize Darnold. I think that, again, switching schemes can affect a quarterback early on. And certainly, you know, even as they age, switching schemes can be problematic.
Quick question. Patriots win the division again this year or not?
I think the division's still weak.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what do you got? Who's going to give them the biggest run for their money?
It's got to be the Jets.
The Bills?
No. Well, I don't think so.
Really?
I think the Jets defense is legit.
The Bills defense is any good?
I'm not saying it's not. I think the Jets defense is gonna be obviously quite powerful.
All right, I could definitely see that. Reams, how about this? What one player do you think is the most important or the key to their team's success, more so than any other player on any other team? If you had to pick one player.
One player?
One player that is more important to their team's success or failure than any other player. Who would it be?
Well, I think going into this year, you know, it's easy to say because there's quite a drop-off of experience. The backup quarterback is Carson Wentz. I would probably argue the same goes in the fact that you have someone like Dak Prescott. You know, he's never been hurt, and you never had a backup quarterback leading the Cowboys since Romo retired. To me, it always comes back down to that quarterback. I mean, you look at the Rams. If Goff went down, you know, where do you go?
Hey, they have Blake Bortles. Come on now.
But, you know, the bottom line is it always comes back. Do you have a feasible backup quarterback at any of the franchises?
So you don't think – I mean, what if Mahomes went down in Kansas City?
Same aspect. I think it would be quite a struggle.
You think so? You don't think Chad Henne, the Berks County native, would be able to keep the ship afloat?
Boy, that's you're setting me up there. Listen, it doesn't matter what organization, what franchise, you know.
Matt Cassel kept the
I know.
Patriots
I was going to say
years ago.
Outside of
Nick
of
Foles.
The hoodie, and obviously having someone who's had experience like that, you know, it's just what made that Eagles run so spectacular. To when it happened with four games left, they kept the ship going and just kept on going. It's rare. It's why, you know, the second important spot on your roster is your backup quarterback most years.
That's your second most important spot on your roster?
In terms of someone, there's always injuries. And if you have nobody who can step in there and keep the ship going in the same direction, you're in trouble.
But isn't that why you pay a Sean McVay all the money he makes, a Kyle Shanahan, or, you know, a Doug Peterson? Like, isn't that why these quarterback gurus get hired?
Well, that's something we should get into.
Why Cliff Kingsbury got hired in Arizona? Because he could develop quarterbacks, you know, one after the other?
Come on. Listen, you're comparing apples and oranges.
No, I'm not saying, you know, Cliff Kingsbury is the case, but I'm just saying, you know, isn't that why you hire an offensive guru? I mean, it's not just, you know, it's because he's going to develop a backup quarterback, right?
And I would like to, as an Eagles fan, I would like to believe that if Nate Sudfeld walked in there, he has played a few games. Granted, they were mop-up games. But you would like to believe that you could mimic what Foles went through.
I mean,
any of the teams, I would think that's what you're hoping.
Yeah.
But is that reality?
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think so often we get into this idea that, you know, your team doesn't have a competent backup quarterback unless it's a guy that's like 35 and has played in the league. I mean, you know, do we really need that? I mean, I think the prime example is, you know, what New England had with Brissett, with Garoppolo, what Indianapolis
yes.
has with Brissett
yes.
backing up Andrew Luck. I think, you know, and certainly a Nick Foles situation obviously is probably one of the best examples with the Eagles at that time. But
you have to have a team that is well balanced, that can withstand an injury and keep on going. You have to have good coaches. I'm not saying any of that is not
Andy Reid made a living out of it. Every time McNabb would get
absolutely.
Hurt, there'd be another quarterback that would come in and would keep the ship afloat. And I think that's, you know, just he's one of a handful of coaches, though, that is able to do that.
Yes. So in reality, you have to obviously need a competent one. There's no doubt. But to me, if you're asking me what's the number one position or who's the number one player that, you know, is going to bring that success to that team, it's going to be obviously one of those big-time quarterbacks.
All right. And to kind of last topic to hit on our NFL talk and NFL storylines, you know, one of my favorites, I don't have HBO, but I wish I did, Hard Knocks with John Gruden and Mike Mayock.
Hey, listen, I'm going to be pulling for those guys to do well. You know, everyone loves Mayock. You're hoping that he does well as the GM. And obviously Gruden is such a
Philly ties again.
Well, okay. I'm not going to disagree with that. But, you know, Gruden is such a lightning rod. You know, you love him for a variety of different reasons, whether it's his outspokenness as a coach or his
quirkiness
or his
mannerisms.
Right. Or just the opposite of when he was the Monday night announcer. But, you know, for a team that's soon moving to Vegas, the Raiders lore, it's a team that you want to be in the mix. And with those two personalities, you're hoping that with this past draft, which sounds like they did a pretty decent job, they're bringing in their kind of guys, some talent. You're hoping, and obviously it'll be a spectacle just with Gruden.
Now, do you think that we're going to get to see the real John Gruden, or do you think it's going to be the Monday Night Football, I love everybody kind of John Gruden?
No, I think, listen, I think there's a difference. When he's the coach, you know, you saw it when he did his quarterback diaries with the rookies coming in on ESPN. You know, when he's coaching, I think that's where he gets his juice. And, you know, listen, Hard Knocks has always allowed the all the humor and cursing and all the realness to come through sometimes.
Yeah, if it would have to be on HBO, or else I think it would be problematic having John Gruden and all the cursing, you know, on any other channel.
So in that regards, and listen, I'm not gonna, you know, pull the wool over anyone's eyes. It's there's parts of it that's a charade or set up. But I think with Gruden, and, you know, you can see the difference when he's coaching versus when he was in the Monday Night studio. It's just night and day. And I think that will come through, or at least I'm hoping it will come through. Last year, though, you could see he was just, not that his hands were tied, but he just was looking to really make some changes.
Yeah, and I would say that last year some of those changes were, you know, problematic for the future of the franchise.
In terms of?
Trading Khalil Mack. Trading Amari Cooper.
You're saying it was wrong.
I would definitely say it was wrong.
Well, in hindsight, I definitely think Mack was.
I mean, Cooper, you know, Cooper, it's a toss-up.
It was a toss-up. But granted, he has really done well with the Cowboys. I think he obviously, you know, you could go back to the fact that this is a common thread in all sports. You get your first time traded. Most times it's a kick in your pants and you have a chip on your shoulder all of a sudden, and then things kind of change for the good for the most part.
Well, with Amari, I think he's looking to get paid at this point in time. You know, his contract's
always
coming up, and I
important.
Think that's a great motivator. Khalil Mack, I think, you know, this was a guy that, you know, you couldn't ask for anything more than what he gave the Raiders and what he's currently giving the Bears. You know, I think that was a phenomenal trade for the Bears. I mean, and, you know, they say they'd probably tell you they trade four first-round picks for him because
Absolutely.
He's that kind of transformational player.
I think what John was trying to do, though, obviously, was flex his muscle.
Well, I think part of it might have also had to do with the owner and, you know, negotiations and, you know, those sorts of things as well. I don't know that John Gruden's automatically saying, "Hey, we're going to get rid of the best player on our team, man."
No.
But, you know, will Derek Carr, here's a prediction for you. Will Derek Carr be the starting quarterback by the end of the year for the Oakland Raiders? Will he still be the quarterback of the present and the future?
With Gruden, you just never know. You don't really know. He's always had a penchant for bringing in those veterans, guys he doesn't have to groom, which goes totally against what, you know, what he kind of tends to groom. In terms of, you know, his ESPN fired football league team series.
But wasn't Derek Carr already a franchise quarterback when Gruden was coming
in? He was saying,
I mean, certainly he had
that
injury-plagued year, which, you know, led to Jack Del Rio and that whole staff being ousted, but, you know, he was getting paid as a franchise quarterback.
It's a great question you bring up because this is the fulcrum year, you know. Next year, 2020-21, they're going to be moving into Vegas, and they better have an idea of who their quarterback is and what the who you're really trying to open up Vegas towards. You know, that you want that excitement. And if it's Derek Carr, go with it. If not, they're going to make a big splash. It ultimately is, are they going to be winning this year? And that's really going to,
you know,
determine.
And certainly, I think if they win, Carr's the golden boy. He's happy. Gruden's happy. Well, maybe he's happy. I don't know. But certainly, you know, winning solves all ills and all problems.
And that West is going to be tough. The Chargers are loaded, and you got Mahomes to deal with.
And the Chargers are the team that people don't realize how well-stocked team is.
They
have phenomenal drafting and player acquisition. And, you know, Anthony Lynn seems to be the real deal as a coach. I mean, he's done a great job, you know, keeping some of the staff from the previous regime there in Wisenhunt, you know, kind of melding his offensive designs with Wisenhunt, bringing in Gus Bradley, having the dynamic pass rushing that they have, the fantastic defensive backs. You know, they're a great team to watch.
Great value. That's a team that gives you great value on the futures market for Super Bowl winning. That's a bet to take. Thanks again for listening to the Poolside Genius Podcast. Don't miss out on spending time poolside, so subscribe using iTunes, Stitcher, or any other major podcast platforms. While you are subscribing, we appreciate any feedback and 5-star reviews.
Remember, when you're poolside, always dive in the deep end.
Splash.